And good evening and welcome to Bird Calls from the Knoll Foundation Studios here at Red River Radio. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. And we invite you to call in with your questions tonight about our feathered friends and the avian world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he is ready to take your questions about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has held since 1997, and he has been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He is also the first author of the book Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M Press, and he has authored more than 70 publications on birds and birding. He and his wife Julie and their two children live in East Texas. Cliff, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Bill, good to be here.
So last month we closed out, as usual, with a conservation note, and would you refresh our memories about that?
We talked about something called Recovering America's Wildlife Act, also known as RAWA, R-A-W-A, and that is a plan to redirect about $1.3 billion of existing revenues towards proactive state-led wildlife conservation for species in need. And I don't think I need to remind people that, you know, having outdoor stuff is really good, but we really need clean air, clean water, plenty of green space, and a lot of area to tromp around. It's really important in my state, in Texas. It's really important in this state of Louisiana and any state listening. You know, wildlife conservation creates jobs. It provides tremendous economic impact to the U.S. We talked about how it brings wildlife watching alone brings about $13.8 billion into the state of Texas, plus another $8 billion from hunting and fishing combined in Texas. The numbers for Louisiana are high as well. So outdoor recreation and clean water, all those things tied together, that is really essential for a state's economy, and it's essential for our well-being and health. So look up RAWA, the Recovering America's Wildlife Act, and do stuff to promote it. We talked about finding your local elected officials and talking to them that these things are important to you.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and he's ready to answer your questions tonight at 800-552-8502. Again, that's 800-552-8502. And at the beginning of each month, after our conservation reminder, we begin with a profile of a bird. What do you have for us this week?
Well, I'm excited to profile the downy woodpecker. This is our listening area's smallest species of woodpecker. We have two different vocalizations of the downy woodpecker to share with you, so let's start with the simple call note here. Okay, and now let's hear the whinny call of the downy woodpecker. Same species, different context. Let's do it again. Both downy woodpeckers here. This is the whinny call. Cool. So you can see a nice photo of a male downy woodpecker by James Childress of Lufkin on the Bird Calls page at redriverradio.org. In that photo, notice this mostly black and white woodpecker is a male because of the tiny red patch on the back of the head, the area known as the nape. Females lack that red, so that patch is black on her. Also notice between the twigs on the left side of the bird's tail that the outermost white tail feather has a couple of tiny black dots. These are distinctive because the downy woodpecker has a larger cousin, the hairy woodpecker, that lacks those tiny black tail dots. Due to mostly forested landscape, there are 8 species of woodpeckers here in the Red River Radio listening area. As stated earlier, this is our smallest species of woodpecker in the area and weighs about the same as 10 or 11 pennies found in your pocket. Despite being tiny with a stubby bill, these guys are noisy drummers that seek out a loud soundboard like a hollow, small hollow stub in a tree. Let's hear the drumming of a downy woodpecker here. Real steady, real rhythmic. Woodpeckers do this drumming to communicate. They're talking to each other, saying, hey, I'm here. This is my terrain, you keep out. So downies occur in a wide variety of forest types, from upland pine forest to bottomland hardwood forest and everything in between. They're also common in urban areas, and they might come to your backyard seed or soot feeder. So like other woodpeckers, this species roosts nightly in a tree cavity or hollow, and in springtime also will nest in that same tree cavity or hollow. And so this is a little bit on the downy woodpecker, and you're still playing that drumming. Let's keep going. I like that. Yeah, we could put some rap music to that, couldn't we? That's starting the beat. And
put a little electric guitar to it.
A little electric guitar, maybe, yeah.
A little rock and roll.
Yeah, get some Run DMC going with that.
There you go. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, and all of our phone lines are currently open. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502 with any question about our avian world and birds. That's 800-552-8502. Now I'll start off this month with a question about, we've had a couple of cold snaps here in the late spring, and just a curiosity if that would impact any of the migratory birds as they're coming through and on their way back north.
Yeah, and you know, one of the ones that we worry about most are purple martins, because they're insectivorous and they typically can show up very early, sometimes in late January or early February, but they make it. You know, our cold snaps typically don't last more than a couple of days, and they can probably make it three-ish, four-ish days without needing to refuel. But after that, it gets pretty tough. But you know, when is it that we've had a week of temperatures not get above 35 degrees? That's pretty unusual this time of the year. And that's when it would be very difficult for birds. I think for the most part, the cold snaps are A-okay for our bird life. They're used to it.
And we are in the beginning of, actually, we're in the middle of the spring migratory season, are we not?
Yes, it has begun. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because just yesterday I had my very first ruby-throated hummingbird, and that was in Nacogdoches in my backyard. And then I was down in northern Jasper County earlier that day, and I had my first hooded warbler. And so those are really good signs of spring. There are a lot of other migrants that should be starting to show up. This is when we'll start seeing or hearing our first Louisiana water thrushes in the area, black and white warbler, yellow-throated vireo, yellow-throated warbler, northern perula. And then just wait a few weeks and a whole different suite of species will come through. And so actually for the next probably 8 weeks, it is what we call spring migration, and it's a lot of fun. This is my favorite time of the year to be out. It's cool weather, there's color in the vegetation, and there are birds coming back that we haven't seen for 6 or 8 months, and those are the ones that bred with us, but there are even some that only passed through 12 months ago that we haven't seen in a whole year. And so it's kind of fun for me to see these old friends come through and get to observe them.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. We have phone lines open now, 800-552-8502, and you were just mentioning a whole bunch of birds. Sounds like we've got a lot of birds that we're going to need to profile in the future and get some sound up.
That's true. We do a different one every month. We've done... let's see, this is our 31st episode tonight, Bill. That's pretty impressive. And so that means we've profiled 31 different birds.
Yeah.
And sadly, we won't refresh those because we've got in the listening area probably 350 to 400 birds to cover. So Gosh, does that mean we're going to be we're going to have to be on the air for a long time to cover all those?
Sounds like it works for me. It's a gig. So give us a call at 800-552-8502. And we're going now to Dave on from South Shreveport. Dave, you're on the line with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Cliff, I'm located about, if you are in studio, I'm about 5 miles south of you in a suburban neighborhood, Ellerby Road Estates.
Okay.
And I called the last time you were on and did not do a good job in describing this hawk, which one of my neighbors claims is a field hawk, which I think is like a yard snake. It's just, he doesn't know what it is either.
That's not helpful at all.
No.
Yeah.
So the hawk that I'm trying to determine its identity has a single note, and it sounds like a chicken. It just goes like chick, chick, and then when it gets excited, it goes chick, 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 chick. But it's always a single note.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very narrow tail. Other than that, it kind of does look like in fact, he's here right now doing it. In the meantime, I find the body of a bird underneath the tree where this thing usually sits and does his calling.
Mm-hmm.
I have a beak, a vertebrae, a leg, and a few feathers.
Huh.
And I don't know if this is the child of this chicken calling hawk or whether it's just been a meal for him.
Yeah, there's not many raptors that are going to have young out of the nest right now because two of our earliest nesting raptors are going to be bald eagle and great horned owl, and that's certainly not what you're describing. So that would probably be remains of lunch that you detected. So let's not talk about what he looks like or sounds like. Let's move on to what's the habitat he occurs in, and tell me more about what he's doing.
Okay, I'm in a suburban neighborhood, lots of tall pine trees, considering it's a neighborhood, a few mixed hardwoods, and he sees the tops of the tallest pine trees.
Okay.
He's got a fairly small area, or at least...
We're getting some kind of feedback here.
...of maybe a half to three-quarters of a mile, and I don't know how he's making a living out of that small an area.
Yeah, well, nothing's coming to mind right now, Dave, and I think that maybe if you can try to get a recording of its call, that I know that's difficult to do, or maybe a photograph even, I know that's even tougher. But I've mentioned this before, with your cell phone, you can use the video part of your camera, and don't worry about what it's pointing at, but use the sound to grab hold of the bird vocalizing.
The closest I can get to him is between the ground and the top of a mature pine tree.
Yeah,
as close to the ground
as I've
seen him.
That's tough. Yeah, so I don't know what you've got there. I mean, we've got lots of sharp-shinned and Cooper's hawks right now in the area, but I don't ever hear those two vocalize in winter.
I've had sharp-shinned hawks here before when we had pigeons in the area, right after a tornado came through and took apart that airport.
Yeah.
And all the pigeons came over here, and the hawks followed them over and were making a pretty good living off the pigeons. So we've had sharp-shinned hawks.
Okay.
And I think this is bigger than a Cooper's hawk.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know what I mentioned last month when you called, but red-shouldered hawk is usually the go-to hawk this time of year in a forested setting, maybe even an edge setting. But here, Bill's playing the call, and that's not at all what you described. Let's listen.
A two-tone call.
Yeah. And so...
It has a single note.
Okay. And then the other go-to raptor, okay, let's back up. You established it's larger than a Cooper's hawk, so that's going to eliminate a lot of things. So if people think, you know, kestrel... also called sparrowhawk. That's clearly smaller. That's not much bigger than a blue jay.
Yeah.
So the next, after red-shouldered hawk, this time of the year, the next go-to would be red-tailed hawk. And he's going to be a bird out in the open, and that would be your field hawk. So let's listen to that one. It's kind of a raspy scream.
And I've heard those in the past, but that's not this guy.
Okay. Well, then, Dave, I'm stumped,
and
I need more information. And next time, if you call, you're going to have to provide either a photo or a sound recording, because you trying to describe it, you've done a great job, but it's not working. And so that's probably my fault. So we need more solid information. And so your homework is to try to get those. If you can't get it, then I don't know what to tell you, but I'm stumped.
No problem.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you,
Dave.
All right, thanks, Dave, for calling. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And we have phone lines open right now at 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. I just had some friends send me a funny pic on YouTube. They want to know if you can identify that bird. It's Woody Woodpecker, folks, yeah. So you can't see it through the microphone. But.
Yeah, and that's probably in response to our profile, the Downy Woodpecker, which
go.
Is very different looking. I think they took Woody Woodpecker after the pileated because he's got the red flowing crest
and
larger. But this guy, the Downy, doesn't have the crest, but it's a good try. We all love Woody Woodpecker.
Yeah, and that must be Lauren and Aaron out there. So, all right, we're going to go next to Caroline from Henderson, Texas. Caroline, you're online with Cliff. What's your question?
Okay, it's Carolyn.
Carolyn, okay.
That's fine. I got a question about birds flying south, because I know birds are flying north for migration, and here lately for the past 3 weeks, they make a sound that I'm not familiar with. I'm thinking ducks. They're too small to be a crane, I'm thinking.
Okay.
So what would be flying south? I used to live in San Leon, which is right off of Galveston Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, south of there, of that, is going toward Angleton in Freeport. There is some... wildlife reserve there for birds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking maybe they were going that way.
Maybe. Are you talking about Brazoria National Wildlife Refuge?
Yeah.
Yep, Brazoria is down there. Now, you know, it's in daily activities, birds can be here in the winter. They flew south to get here, but they might have a roost site on the south side of your property and fly north. You know, so cardinal directions don't always work for even just daily activities, but
there's a large number of the same breed that are going that way.
They're going, and they're vocal, you
and
said?
They have never flew over my house like that. I live out in the country.
Yeah, okay. And they're not blackbirds or grackles?
Usually those travel in a big, large flock.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure.
Okay.
I just thought maybe somebody might have brought it to your attention, and you might know the breed. Or
yeah, there's probably over 100 species right now that are going one direction or the other. So just by being migratory doesn't narrow it down to one or two choices.
Well, I went on the internet and I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Well, like the last caller, if you can get us a photo or a sound clip or something, that would really help. But otherwise, this is really difficult. Trying to describe a bird in words, it's difficult. Yeah.
Well, you said something about planting something for the wildlife. What about buckwheat or something like that? I have 20 acres,
mm-hmm.
and I've been thinking about doing the thing you're talking about, and I have a lot of deer that comes through here.
Okay.
But I have a lot of birds, too.
Right. And so you're talking about replanting your property? Is that
to squeeze out some of the weeds. I got like 10 acres that I don't even use.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking maybe do something like that. I love just watching wildlife.
Right. Well, you might be surprised that 10 acres of what we think of as weeds, and a weed is something undesirable, maybe undesirable to some of us, might be super desirable to wildlife. So I'd be really cautious about possibly removing a bunch of native plants that you might have birds using it. You know, if you walk in there, you might start flushing lots of birds in there. But I wouldn't change it to an agricultural crop. That's not going to work.
Okay,
yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. So, and that's something I've noticed over the years. I drive around a lot. I have a statewide job. I go all over from El Paso to Beaumont to Amarillo to Brownsville, and it's just impressive how few weedy fields we're leaving anymore. Not only are we converting them to non-native grasses, grasses that never were here. They're from Africa. They're from the Mediterranean. And then that's one thing. But then I've noticed that there are very few of what you describe, what I'd call a fallow field. And it might be only fallow for 1 or 2 years, but there's a lot of wildlife that would use that. And some of those areas, if you manage them well, maybe with prescribed fire, you could get wildflowers coming up, and in the spring you might be just loaded with butterflies and other pollinators, and including hummingbirds. And then the wintertime, those weedy fields are great for a lot of different sparrows and towhees and house wrens and all kinds of stuff. So, no, I wouldn't trade it out at all. I would keep it wild, keep it native.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Now, another question. What kind of bird makes a nest on the side of your house and it's made out of mud?
The barn swallow.
The
locals call them mud swallows because, of course, they're making their nests out of mud. But the correct name is barn swallow, B-A-R-N.
They eat a lot of flying bugs.
Yes, they do. And so I know a lot of people that get upset with them because they leave a little pile of poo right near the nest. Well, you know, I can live with that if these are neighbors that are eating pesky flies that bother me.
They're mosquitoes.
Eating mosquitoes as well. That's right. And so I visit a lot of people that are upset about this. They can't handle
I'm
that
not,
pile.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. I know somebody that knows exactly where the poo goes, and she put out a cardboard sheet and puts cat litter on it. And I thought it was really clever. So whatever it poops, and it's for a short window, it's hitting this cardboard sheet and getting absorbed by the cat litter. You probably don't even need the cat litter. You could just use a sheet of cardboard, recycled cardboard that you have.
Oh, right.
And that's an idea. But those are good neighbors to have. And we want to, you know, I wouldn't say you need to encourage them, but if you have them, don't discourage them.
Well, I haven't took the nest down in the last couple of years. They keep coming back every spring.
Okay.
A clutch of young. And also have, they'll be coming later this summer. What do you call the ones that build the nest in the chimney?
The chimney swift.
Yeah, and they eat a lot of bugs.
They do. Those are, you know, all day long, that's all they're doing is flying. They don't perch. They're all day flying, and they're eating insects on the wing. Yep.
It's like from sunset to sundown.
That's right. And you know that if you've got them in your chimney, because every evening you'll start hearing them squawking and making a little bit of noise. And you know what? That lasts a few minutes because they get quiet because they got a job to do the next day, and they're gone to bed.
Yeah.
So they're not chirping all night long. They're super exhausted from flying all day. They're sleeping at night. Right. So you'll hear them for a few minutes, and then the next day they get up and go, and they've got a job to do. And again, another good neighbor to have, because that job they're doing is beneficial to us.
That's right. And, you know, I learned so much from listening to this program.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah. I look forward to your coming, and I've been living up here from San Leon for 5 years.
Okay.
And I'm just a city girl, but I've turned to a country girl, and I'm just living with all these animals, and I'm learning about these birds.
Well, we need more people like you moving to the area, so we're glad you're here, Carolyn. Thanks for coming up to the good old East Texas woods. We love it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. We have phone lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have Hill online at Manny. Hold on, Hill. We're going to get to you in just a moment. Right now, Gail in Marshall, Texas. You're online with Cliff. What's your question?
Well, I have a pair of house wrens that avoided the government housing and built the world's messiest nest in my porch light.
Uh-oh.
And so my concern is whether to keep that light off, or does it, it's not an incandescent, it's, you know, that little round nasty looking thing.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hurt the birds, and I don't want to hurt their babies. So do I leave the light on? Do I leave it off? And or what?
Yeah, I wouldn't turn it on. I mean, I don't know how hot it could get, and that stuff is dry tender. Yeah, so I wouldn't do it. And also, it's nesting near your house, but I would bet my 401k that it's a Carolina wren. We don't have house wrens nesting in the area. So it's nesting near the house. It's a wren, but it's a Carolina wren. And I just submitted an article to my agency's magazine about bird behaviors, and I've profiled 11 different interesting behaviors about birds, and one of them relates to what you're calling about. It's a dummy nest. And Carolina wrens and Buick's wren out farther west of here, like in central Texas area, they build what are called dummy nests, and they're not used. So it's a fake nest. They might have one or two of them, and the real nest is somewhere else nearby that's very hidden. So what they do, the idea is that they're going to the dummy nest, and if you're a predator, you're going following them to the wrong nest because there's no eggs, no tasty eggs, no tasty nestlings in the dummy nest. So I'm going to guess that could be a dummy nest. And so they've built one just this last few weeks in our shoe cubby on our back porch. And they've done it before. And we're all excited. Oh, they're building a nest in the shoe cubby. And then after a while, we're the dummy because it's not a real nest.
So what you're saying is get up on the ladder, and if there are eggs in it, leave it alone.
Yes.
And if not, evict them and port them to the government house.
Yes, and then fix the light where they can't get back in.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's dangling or hanging down or what, but...
No, it's not. It's open. You know, it's one that it screws in, but it's open with the bulb above it. It's an ordinary porch
light. Yeah. Okay, well, then maybe if you can get another fixture, I mean, I don't want you to break the bank, but if this happens a lot, you might want to think about a different light fixture. But for now, when you do see them build the nest, if you determine there's no eggs, pull the nest out. If they look like they're going to rebuild, just get on it before they finish. In other words, remove it while it's 10% done or 15% done. Don't wait till it's 100% done. And when you do remove the stuff, go walk it over to the garbage. Because if you just drop it right there, they'll go, hey, look at all this nest material. I can use this.
Lowe's is below it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, again, Carolina wren, it's possibly a dummy nest. And because of its location, I wouldn't want you to start a little fire because that light bulb, if it's certain wattage, it could get really hot and the rest is history. And you don't hear about that, though. I mean, it's not like... You know, I don't want people to start saying, oh, the birds are going to burn my house down. Hey, look at the data. How many times you see a fire marshal report that pointed the finger at a bird? I can't think of it. But
we did burn our courthouse down with the bird nest, but that's only because the welder, thinking he was getting rid of the bird nest, shot the bird nest with his welding torch.
Well, that's not a bird. That's not the bird's fault.
No,
that's dumb Bubba's fault right there.
Human error.
Yeah. All right, Gail. Well, thanks for the call.
Well, I've never heard of dummy nest. Thank you.
Yep.
I too learned something every
time
I listen.
Great. Thank you, Gail.
And let's give a listen real quick to the Carolina wren, just so folks can get an idea of what that bird sounds like. And I hear that all the time out in my front yard.
Yep.
So.
Julie, 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 Julie.
There you go.
Yep.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. We have open lines right now. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Our last caller online is Hill from Manny. Hill, you're online with Cliff. What's your question?
Thank you very much. We've been watching an eagle nest for the last several years. And it was set in a tall pine tree, and in this area down here, about every sixth or seventh pine tree is dying, I guess, from drought, whatever it is. Anyway, you look out, one of every six pine trees is dead. Well, the tree that the eagles built their nest in is dead.
Uh-oh.
And it appears, we don't watch them constantly, but it appears that they may have abandoned that nest because we can't see any activity or any sign that there's been any activity around the nest. Do you think an eagle, if its nest tree died, would they just bail out and find another one, or would they
I don't think in the middle of the nesting season, no. I think they'd finish it, you know, unless there was a windstorm. That'll really wreck the breeding season. But a dying tree, I mean, that pine will still hold together. If it died in, if it was alive when they built the nest or laid the eggs, which is, you know, December, January, it's going to stay, you know, its integrity will be there throughout the nesting season. I don't think it would fall. Now, that doesn't mean a bald eagle knows about wood integrity, and I mean, I don't either, really, for that matter.
They would know that whether the tree was dead or alive.
Yeah. So, if do you think that they, you know, they'll reuse nests? But one thing we've learned in Texas is that nest is used for on average about 3 to 5 years, and the nest might be fine, the tree might be fine, but the birds move on. So we shouldn't look at these nests as being used for decades and decades and generations, because that's not correct for most of the eagle nests in our area. So do you have any idea if it nested in that same platform last year?
I believe that it did last year, but I'm not sure this year.
Okay. Well, then I would hope that they did move along and built a new nest. It doesn't take too long for them to do that. You know, and it's the size of it's almost the size of a Volkswagen Beetle up in the tree.
Yeah,
so
it's a great big nest.
It is.
It's just curious where if they were nesting in place and they noticed that the tree died, would they just automatically just go ahead and move on knowing that that's
good? Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't know the answer. But, you know, the drought has pretty much subsided. If you've got pine trees dying now, and if they're your trees or your neighbors, you might have a professional come and look if you've got a beetle problem, because that might be the cause. Because we've had lots of good rain lately, and you know, the drought in 2010 and 11, you didn't see the trees dying for many months, maybe 18 months after, but that's all subsided. So you might have something else I'd look into, and get a professional out there to look.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Hill.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, and we have all lines open right now, so you can get in right away at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And a reminder, we've got a special program coming up next month.
I'm pretty excited about it. We are going to have a joint episode with Dr. Beverly Burden with What's Bugging You, a longtime show here at Red River Radio, and we're going to combine forces. And what's really neat is Bill recorded a promo, and I feel like this is the Super Bowl.
Yeah, this is our bud
yeah,
moment.
This is our moment where, you know, the new Star Wars is coming out, and if you want to see the trailer, you got to watch the halftime show of the Super Bowl. Well, this is our moment right here. So this, right, correct me if I'm wrong, this is not aired yet.
Nope.
And this is the first time listeners are going to hear this promo, and hopefully you're going to hear it again in the coming weeks, because this episode we're talking about will be April 10th on Tuesday night, and let's hear the promo. Go for it.
Hey, you keep your bugs off my birds.
Well, you have to keep your birds away from my bugs.
Your bugs are mighty tasty to my birds.
Well, they'll find out that some of them are not so tasty.
Join us on Tuesday, April 10th at 6 p.m. for a joint episode of What's Bugging You and Bird Calls, when Dr. Beverly Burden of LSUS and Cliff Shackelford of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department team up for an hour to answer your questions about more than just the birds and the bees. Yeah, we're going to be doing that sort of the grudge match, you know, the birds versus the bees.
Yeah, and we're all going to be friends during the show, and we're going to do it very differently than what we do during bird calls. So we won't profile a species at the beginning, and we won't end with a conservation tip. And instead, we're going to take calls from anybody who wants to, you know, ask us a question about birds or insects or both. And so it's a joint episode. It should be a lot of fun, and I'm really excited about the promo. It felt just like seeing the Star Wars trailer during the Super Bowl halftime.
There you go. And I was up in Spring Hill this past weekend, and there's a tree, a redbud tree up there being swarmed by some kind of bees. So I got a picture of it and sent that to Dr. Burden. And obviously, this is a pollinator, so we don't want to necessarily destroy it. But I'm going to ask her about what kind of birds might eat this kind of bee, just out of curiosity.
Oh, see, you're going to make it tough on us.
There you go.
Go against each other.
Maybe. There you go. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. Give us a call right now. We have lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding birds and our avian world is welcome. And we're going to go next to Paul from Marshall, Texas. Paul, what's your question tonight?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing good, Paul. What's up?
Well, this is the same number I called to donate last week, and I called out Mr. Shackelford's name when I donated to my
All right.
public radio station. Just a little plug for that.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul.
And I'm not quite a bird nerd, but I'm trying to get there.
Okay.
And I was using the cheapest bird seed the last couple of years, and I upgraded to black sunflower seed.
Good.
Probably in January when it got so horribly cold up here.
Uh-huh.
And I have noticed a different type of bird coming,
okay.
I believe.
Okay. What does it look like?
Small, reddish brown, triangular pattern on the chest and the head.
Uh-huh. And when you say triangular, you mean what color is that triangular pattern?
It's a red brown.
Okay.
Almost not an orange, but I mean a true red brown.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a house finch, not to be confused with house sparrow, but house finch. Looks like, if for those that are familiar with the purple finch, so it's got a kind of a plum color on it, and they do come to feeders, and they're a little bit larger than your goldfinch, but yet smaller than the cardinal. So does that sound fitting for your bird? Okay.
Yes, and I think I've seen some goldfinches too.
Yes, and the goldfinches lose their bright canary yellow when they come visit us in the winter. You don't see You don't see that canary yellow until the breeding season. And I've seen some that might hold some yellow, but not anything like a June bird up in Maryland. You know, they're just canary yellow and gorgeous. So they lose that color in the wintertime when they visit us, and they'll come to your black oil sunflower. And I'm glad you shifted seed, because when we're talking about cheap seed, I'm guessing you're just talking about like a mix with a lot of millet, which is a waste. Yeah,
right.
It's like getting the fruit salad and they shove honeydew and it's 90% of your fruit salad is honeydew. And I got nothing against honeydew, but, you know, give me some strawberries, give me some grapes, give me something else. Or cantaloupe's another one that's kind of a filler. And I love cantaloupe, don't get me wrong, but I didn't order a bowl of cantaloupe. I ordered the mixed fruit salad, right? So,
last week I was in Tractor Supply in Longview, and they had a bad season for their suet blocks, and you can buy a case of those things with 12 or 15 in there for $3.50, and they're normally $10, and I'm a value shopper.
Okay, now what happened to them? You said there was something wrong?
No, they just have too many of them. I mean, they
had too many of them.
Yeah,
okay.
They've got them marked down to nearly, you know, all cost, basically.
Yeah, and
there wouldn't be any problem storing those until next winter, would there?
No, and you're talking about soot cakes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if you can freeze them. I've never done that. I don't know if you could freeze them. You might Google that and see, or read on the label if you put them in the back of the fridge for 10 months. Because let me tell you why. When it gets hot here, which it's coming, those soot feeders usually start dripping and liquefying.
Uh-huh.
And then the ants come out, and the ants will find it, and you know you got to have an ant moat to keep them off of it. But if you don't have an ant moat, then all of a sudden you're feeding the ants with that soot feeder. So yeah, I like your idea of trying to see if you can buy it cheap now and store it till next year. And I would think fridge or freezer.
Is there any value in having those soot cakes out now?
Yeah, it's still cool enough that there's birds that will use it. And I wouldn't do it in the dead of summer. No way. You're wasting your time and your money. Even if you got them cheap, don't do it. It can be a pretty sticky mess. And again, the ants and other insects, it's a problem. So unless you like that, remember next episode is going to be with Dr. Beverly Burden. She's going to want the insects. So I don't want to trash talk the bugs.
They do their part too.
That's right. Yep. All right, Paul, are we good?
Yeah, one other thing.
Sure.
We like to go down to Kettle Lake quite a bit. Do you know of any particular hot spot or something I need to look down there, look for on the river? We like the Highway 43 River Bridge going east all the way to Johnson's and out the Big Lake. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, and are you asking about getting out on the water and looking around?
And looking around, absolutely on the water. Is there a particular hot spot to look for? Are there any eagles down there, or what do you know?
Well, you can't go wrong getting out on the water. If you don't have your own kayak, canoe, or boat, you can rent those, or you can go on a guided trip. That's just a great way to see birds. And if you wait a couple more weeks, let's see, maybe four more weeks, there'll be prothonotary warblers nesting, and they are super thick on Caddo Lake, and I just love that bird. It's golden yellow. They nest in cavities. They're really thick around Caddo Lake, and they're just not back yet. They're wintering down in the tropics right now, but they start showing up in mid, maybe the second, third week of April. Well, first or second week of April, but by the end of April, they're really singing a lot, building nests. So if you can wait to mid to late April, that's what I would wait for. They're super fantastic. You can't beat the ambiance backdrop of Spanish moss and the bald cypress. So the hot spot is the whole darn place.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's just so cool. And there's the Caddo Lake State Park is fantastic. You can do some land birding there. The topography is so impressive to me. It's so darn hilly. And there's some big timber in there, and there's a lot of different breeding vireos and warblers in that state park. And then kind of across the highway a little bit down is the Caddo Lake National Wildlife Refuge.
Right.
And that's bigger. It's got more open pine. There's brown-headed nuthatches in there. A lot of different birds. The two together are pretty cool, but you can't beat getting out on the water and doing Caddo Lake by boat, whatever that may be, kayak, canoe, or motorboat. But you know, kayak and canoe, you can sneak up on stuff. You might not be able to cover 20 miles, but you don't need to, because you might have that moment where you paddle right up to an area where there's prothonotary nesting, and he's singing away and could care less about you. He's not threatened by you. And you get these moments where he's 8-10 feet away from your kayak. So, So I think that sounds like a really fun trip. And get a couple extra kayaks, and I'll go with you. How about that, Paul? Yeah, you're making it sound good. I am too, because it's making me, you can tell I'm getting interested in this time of the year and the birds that are coming.
You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, all of outdoors is exploding.
That's right. So, well, good. Paul, enjoy that trip on Caddo Lake.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we have open lines right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding birds in our avian world is welcome. And I do have a question. You were talking about good places to see these kinds of birds. And that is, if you're a birder with a camera, you may not want to go out on a kayak with
a
camera.
That's right.
Especially an expensive 35mm. But how do you find, places to get up close where you can take good wildlife photos of some of these birds in the wild?
And I mentioned the prothonotary warbler. He's not much bigger than, I don't know, a salt shaker.
Yeah.
A little one. So this is not what you want to start off with, or even if you're an experienced photographer, to really go after the bigger birds first.
Right.
So start with the waterfowl, the wading birds, things like waterfowl, everybody knows those are ducks and geese. wading birds, things like herons and egrets. So guess what both of those have in common? Water.
Right.
So, and yeah, you're right. Don't take those things out on the boat if you think you're going to tip it. But on by land, you might be able to creep up on a great blue heron that's across the cove or a flock of blue-winged teal that are out there on the water. But start with larger birds, not only to photograph, but if you're thinking about becoming a bird watcher, we say the same thing. We don't tell people to start with the little tiny birds because they're difficult to see, they're fast moving. You eventually get to that stage later, but if you're going to take a beginning bird walk out or take a group of sixth graders out, you would take them to a water body that has water birds because they're larger, they're easier to see, they're not typically hiding. And you know, you wouldn't do a warbler walk when tiny little warblers are in the canopy 80 feet up and they're hiding in the leaves. It's just super difficult. You take the more intermediate to advanced birder on that kind of an outing. So so to answer your question, I'd say start with water birds, and we have no shortage of places to go with water. We've got refuges, we've got parks, and we've got lots of public areas where you can get on the edge of the water and try to snap a picture of a bald eagle. That's a good way to start with photography. It's a good way to start bird watching.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. We have open lines right now, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our avian world is welcome right now. We had mentioned humorously earlier the Woody Woodpecker. Now, a lot of these cartoon characters are actually, you know, patterned after real birds. You had mentioned what bird do you think Woody Woodpecker was?
Pileated Woodpecker is pretty close. He's got that red flowing crest.
Right.
He's got that body shape. And, you know, I think that people think woodpeckers are probably, you know, hoodlums because they're pecking on the wood and maybe pecking on the side of the house, and that's a problem, and maybe pecking on the telephone pole. But you remember what we said earlier, that drumming sound that we played at the beginning, that's a form of communication. So it's not that woodpeckers are trying to get in the house or trying to damage the telephone pole. They're using that as a soundboard to talk to other woodpeckers. It's a form of of communication.
Right.
Yeah.
And here is actually the pileated woodpecker.
Okay.
So that's kind of the laugh almost.
Yep,
you
yep.
Know,
that's right.
Woody does it more musically.
That's right. Good point. I didn't mention that about the laugh. That's a good point. And gosh, we've got, because we profile these species, you've got a pretty good library at your fingertips.
Yeah, we're getting pretty good. So
yeah.
I've got a good collection.
Yeah.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. I have a caller online now, but no names, so I'll just go to that and tell us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Dave in Nacogdoches.
Okay, Dave, what's your question tonight?
This morning in our neighborhood, I was listening to a northern mockingbird going through its repertoire,
mm-hmm.
and included in that was a chuckle-will and a wood thrush,
uh-huh.
and those are both summer residents. How is it that mockingbird's able to duplicate that?
Yeah, that's really cool, because a lot of people think that they've got to hear stuff immediately to be able to mimic it. And then same thing with storage in the memory banks. But clearly, you know, the chuckwills widows haven't come through yet, and they haven't been singing yet any day now. Actually, whippoorwills will be coming through now. They usually beat chucks by a little bit. And then wood thrushes haven't come through yet either. So these guys are clearly working off of memory, and pretty neat. And so if he didn't do that during the winter months, maybe he's as excited about springtime as we are. He's getting his spring recordings out. It's kind of cool. So so here we go. Bill is firing up Chuckwill's widow. Nope, that's whippoorwill.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. You're right.
That is.
Yeah, that's it.
That's my chuckwill widow.
That's Chuck.
I recorded that in Florida.
That's right. That's Chuck Will's widow. So listen for those in a few weeks. Do we have whippoorwill? I don't know that we have.
Yes, we do have.
Yeah, let's do whippoorwill.
Let's get into that.
Because this one starts flying through our area in the last part of March, and they will be vocal right at dusk. So let's listen to whip. Yep.
Yeah.
And we can hear those in our area. You got to go out of the city, get to remote areas, try to find a county road where there's not any lights or dogs barking. And right when the orange setting sun and the sky go away and it gets jet black, but just the right front end of that, that's when whippoorwills will call. So if you say, it's 2 o'clock, I can't sleep, 2 a.m., I can't sleep, I'm going to go out, they're not going to be singing. They're singing for a short window right at dark, the whippoorwill.
Okay.
But that's neat. You called about northern mockingbirds. Great bird. It's a bird that they can imitate. I mean, one individual can imitate 30, 35 different sounds. There's a lot of different publications that talk about that. And not just birds. They'll imitate squeaky gates and car alarms. So pretty
cell
versatile. Cell phones, yeah. So pretty versatile and a great bird to have in the neighborhood. We've also heard in the past from callers talking about northern mockingbirds that are singing through the night. And I'm glad, Dave, that you brought up mockingbird, because this is the time of the year where we believe those are unmated males that are kind of in hyperdrive looking for that date.
Oh.
And so they're singing through the night. And, you know, we get a lot of calls at Parks and Wildlife saying, you know, can you come get this bird out of our yard? Well, agencies don't do that. We don't relocate birds. And, you know, unfortunately, you probably got to close the window. That's usually one of the things. But also, there's usually a night light, a security light. That's usually one thing that these mockingbirds have in common, singing at night. So you might try to shut the security light down if you can, if you don't like them singing through the night. Great bird, Dave, and thanks for the call. And keep listening to him to see what else he's singing, because I guarantee you, it's not just Chuck Will's widow and wood thrush. As you know, there's probably going to be a titmouse he's imitating in there, a red-bellied woodpecker, and all kinds of other birds. So keep listening and keep notes of what he's imitating.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
thank you. Thank you, Dave.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. We still have time to take a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we were talking earlier about getting out on the water. What are some of the other hot spots in our area that you can list for birders who really want to get out and kind of either just capture them with their eyes or with their camera or with a recorder?
Yeah, and again, the local state parks in any state you live in, the closest national wildlife refuge. We don't have any national parks near here. We have also national forests that are very underutilized by wildlife watchers. And actually, I should take that back, because yesterday I was in the south end of the Angelina National Forest, not far from Zavala, and I was driving along a road all by myself, and there's a guy walking down the road in the longleaf, and I saw the car parked, and he had New Mexico plates, and he was a college student from New Mexico State that was looking for birds here in East Texas. And I thought, wow, that guy drove all the way from New Mexico to come all the way to the other side of Texas near the Louisiana border to look for the birds that we have special here that he certainly can't get in New Mexico. But he was on the national forest land. So that's another thing. If you're in Leesville, you've got the Kisatchee. If you're in Jasper, you've got the Angelina. If you're in Hemp Hill, you've got the Sabine National Forest. Crockett, you've got the Davy Crockett. If you're in Lufkin, you've got all those three choices near you. If you're in Shreveport, you've got there's plenty of different parts of the Kisatchee, there's different units that might be close to you, but there's plenty of public areas to go. You just kind of need to look around and find out what's close to you and look for our birding guides that tell you also where the hot spots are. Look for our wildlife watching guides.
All right. And quickly, we got time for one more caller. Lucy from Shreveport, you're online. You've got to state your question quick because we're running out of time.
Okay, I just had a quick question about a bird I heard not here, but in Virginia. I thought you might know. It's a night bird.
Okay.
I heard it calling last night, and it's still pretty much winter there, and it just makes a single tone, sounds almost like a squeaky toy, sort of high-pitched.
And this is in Virginia at night?
Yes. After dusk.
And it's not an insect, not a frog?
No, it was just a single tone, like, I thought maybe it was a predator bird, but I didn't know.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like any of our owls or...
Okay.
And in Virginia, like you said, it's still winter. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of stuff calling at dark. Are we talking about certainly after dark, right? Not getting
definitely
dark.
Definitely after dark.
Okay.
It was in the woods.
Okay. Yeah, then, you know, we have played before, Bill. I don't know if we have time to
wrong one.
to play the great horned owl. I mean, this is not really what you describe, but we do have a young great horned owl, if you can find that.
Let me get to that.
And those make a funny noise. They don't hoot like a great horned owl.
Oh, the young owl. Yeah. I never thought of that. Okay.
Yeah. Listen.
Yes, that sounds like it. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah, that's a young great horned owl.
I appreciate it.
Well, that was easy. You came up. You had to leave Virginia to come back to Shreveport to call us to get that. Hey, that's pretty cool, though. Yeah.
Thank you, Lucy.
All right,
thank you.
All right.
And it is time for our conservation moment here. Cliff, what do you have for us this week?
We're going to talk about using local firewood. We're going to tie that back to our downy woodpecker. So there's nothing better on a cold evening than snuggling up to a warm fire in the fireplace, the pot-bellied stove, or the campfire. But did you know there are tree diseases and insects alive and well inside firewood? To fuel your fire, be sure to use locally collected firewood. If brought in from afar, firewood could contain tree-killing fungus or non-native and destructive beetle larvae such as the emerald ash borer. The ash borer is a native of Asia, but is racing across the U.S. in part due to hitchhiking and firewood and wiping out our native species of ash tree as it spreads. Even the experts inspecting a pile of wood can't always see a couple of tiny insect bore holes or few microscopic fungus spores. Non-native forest insects and diseases have both no natural defenses against them within the trees and little to no predators and parasites in their new homes. This means that non-native insects and diseases can reproduce quickly and become out of control, which could wipe out millions of trees in their wake. As a general rule, hauling firewood 50 miles is too far, but 10 miles or less is just right. If you buy firewood, look for a USDA stamp of approval that the wood has been heat treated. That means they got it hot enough to kill any invasive fungi or insects hiding on or inside the wood, and obtain your firewood locally to ensure you're not aiding in the spread of non-native and destructive insects and fungi. Do it for the birds.
All right. Thanks again, Cliff, for joining us this week for Bird Calls. You've been listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, from Red River Radio. Our producers for this show are Bill Beckett and Cliff Shackelford, with help tonight from Wally Derleth, Tim Schnell, and Drake Smith from the Alpha Epsilon Delta Honor Society. We will have the audio up for this program in the next few hours at redriverradio.org. And remember, if you have a photo or sound clip of a bird that you'd like Cliff to identify, you can send it to my email address at wbeckett@lsus.edu. This is Red River Radio, and we are KDAQ, Shreveport Bossier, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Magnolia, and KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches. I'll get it out before the end of the show.